I did bring her to the writer's room all the time because I was so nervous having my own show that I was like, I have to have a therapy. I'm like one of those people that has to have a schnauzer follow her everywhere.
Dog people, thank you for coming back to Rescued by a Dog, the podcast about dogs who have actually saved their owners' lives. I'm Laura, the host of this podcast. Are you seeking the finest dog bed for your loyal companion? Well, lucky you. Look no further. Today's episode is proudly sponsored by Big Barker, the sole provider of clinically proven dog beds for large breeds. With a remarkable 10-year warranty and an extraordinary 1-year trial, their beds offer unrivaled quality and peace of mind. Backed by scientific research, Big Barker beds deliver superior orthopedic support, ensuring your furry friend experiences unparalleled comfort and joint relief. Don't settle for anything less. Visit their website, bigbarker.com, today and treat your beloved pet to the ultimate sleeping experience. Big Barker is a trusted choice for discerning pet owners. Today, you'll hear from the amazing actress Jess St. Clair and her husband, the writer Dan O'Brien. When they simultaneously developed cancers, the love of their pup Emma helped them survive.
Hello, hello, hello. Can you hear me?
Dan O'Brien and Jess St. Clair, I'm so happy to see your faces.
Hello, friend.
Hello, my friend.
So happy to see you, Laura. Thank you for having us.
Yeah. Jess St. Clair, you make me laugh in everything that you're in.
Oh, thank you.
And Dan, I've been in awe of your writing since college. When I remember sophomore year, I remember reading something you wrote and being like, well, I thought I was a writer, but now I can't do this stuff.
Please, thank you.
So thank you for coming on here to talk about your dog and how your dog has helped you through a lot of stuff.
Yeah.
Of course.
Yeah. Sweet Emma. We miss Emma, her. Emma, we miss her every day.
Emma P. Schnauzer. For some reason, we gave her a middle initial of P, but I'm not sure what that stood for.
Yeah. And also, I named my character in Playing House after our dog.
Oh, that's right. Yes.
Oh!
What was so funny is one day she did come to set with me quite a bit in very beginning before I had a baby. And
you smuggled her in.
I would smuggle her in and I would say that she was like on a show, even though she was like the rattiest rescue schnauzer ever. And when the characters would say Emma, when they would call my name, she'd be like, rawr, rawr. It's because she thought that she was being called. It was so cute.
Oh my God.
That's how obsessed we are with
her. I should say also our production company is named after her as well. We are called Schnauz House Productions. Schnauz House Productions. And I should say we didn't, like Jessica said, we rescued her. We didn't know what she was. We thought she was just a kind of mutt or something. Because when we got her, she didn't really look like a schnauzer. She was, you know, very skinny. She was two-toned. She was brown from like the waist down.
Like light brown and then gray.
And then like schnauzer gray from the waist up and very curly. So we thought she was a schnoodle. We thought she's perhaps part poodle, part schnauzer for a while. And then once she got healthy, she really looked like a schnauzer. But it wasn't until we ran into like two or three on separate different occasions, two or three schnauzer breeders who were like, oh, no, this is a schnauzer. You
right.
have...
I think we just like the name Schnoodle better.
Schnoodle sounded funny.
So it was kind of a bummer to have to accept it. But we used to say she was business in the front, party in the back when she was two-toned.
Yes, she was two-toned. But eventually she just looked like a schnauzer. I mean, we never gave her the like classic schnauzer cut because I would cut her hair myself.
That was always something to watch.
Wow. Well, because she had the beard, you know, and I've got a beard. So I felt like, you know, I was responsible for keeping her beard in good shape.
Also, Laura, why don't you tell them what you did on the eve of the birth of our child?
Oh, so we already had, so we adopted Emma, I think pretty soon after we moved to LA. So 2008. It's part of like a rescue thing that happened in our neighborhood. And we just found her that way. It's it's actually an organization that
what's it called? Perfect Pet Rescue.
Called Perfect Pet Rescue. And it was a woman. I think they're still in business here in Los Angeles. They might be West Side Los Angeles. And she would, go to, you know, the pound or whatever and collect mostly smaller dogs. and then bring them to, we live in Santa Monica, so she'd bring them to the main street, main drag in Santa Monica on the weekends. And, you know, we were looking for a dog for weeks, if not months. And it was kind of, you know, a love at first sight, love at first walk experience when we found Emma. She just felt right.
She was about 23 pounds, depending on how many treats she was getting. As she got older, she would get a treat every time we passed by her in the last couple of years. Yeah, literally every time we passed her, I'd be like, here's another treat.
She got a little heavier.
She got a little heavier. She was gray and white. She was, as soon as she lost her business in the front, party in the back, kind of fade. That was, I think, either she had been out in the sun or nutrition, we're not sure, but she turned into a perfectly gray and white salt and pepper, they say, schnauzer. And she was bigger than a mini and smaller than a regular size schnauzer. But we don't know where she came from, but we do know she was perfectly trained when she arrived. We had never had a dog before. We completely flipped out when we first got her. I was like, we had no idea how to take care of this animal. And she was completely, never barked. Schnauzers bark all the time. She never barked. She put herself to bed at night. It was like she was just
at exactly 10 p.m. every night.
Is that true?
She would just kind of pad over to her bed and go to sleep.
Yeah, she's very noble.
And we were terrified, as Jess said, you know, we were nervous about
it. And then they were one of those rescues that like didn't check your house. They just like, we just wrote them a check for $200 and then just drove away with the dog. And I remember going to Petco, like, what do you get a dog? We were cat people growing up. So I really, quite frankly, I flipped out and I said, I don't know if I can do this, because Dan actually had to leave town first for a production and I had to go shoot something and I didn't know what to do. I had to smuggle this dog in to the Paramount lot under a blanket. Like it was like, I really was smuggling the dog in and I was so overwhelmed and I didn't trust myself to be able to handle this. And a lot of people in my life were also like, you know what? You're just not a dog person. Like you just can't do it. And I was like, that's all I had to hear to be like, I'm not going to name names, but I was like, no, I'm going to do this. But I do remember the moment that I was like, she wasn't eating. And I was like staying up all night when she was barking and all this. And I thought, forget it. I'm just going to like bring her back to the rescue and say, I can't handle this. And we were sitting in a stoplight and I looked over at her and she looked at me and our like eyes met. And I said, oh, fine. Yes, you're it. Yes, we're going to do this. Like, we're going to do this, but I want you to know I don't know what I'm doing. And the rest was history. We had moved to LA probably a year before then, and it had been a really hard year. Like, moving to LA is so
From New York City, yeah.
Hard. It's like a different country. I was just like crying all the time in Target parking lots and
the biggest shock from New York to LA is suddenly you're just not around people so much. You can feel so much more isolated in LA. And that's another reason why we wanted a dog, because we could walk the dog around Santa Monica and you could chit chat with people on the street, on the sidewalk.
Yeah. Like Santa Monica, where we live, has more dogs. I'd say this, I don't know where I read this, but more dogs per people than like anywhere else. So, and I love to small talk. It's like what feeds me. So when I felt like the cord had been ripped out of the wall when we moved to LA. I'm like, how do I get to the people? And then once we got a dog, I loved it here. Because now I can meet the neighbors and we were at the birthday party of a dog, you know, down the street. People in California are obsessed with their dogs.
And then we had our first and only child in 2013. So Emma was, you know, and we weren't sure how old Emma was when we adopted her.
Right.
We were told maybe she was a year old, maybe she was two or three, somewhere in that range.
But what did you do with the Schnauzer clippers?
So I'm getting to that. To my own hair, I gave myself a crew cut, you know?
The dog clippers.
Yeah, they're good. They're expensive.
They are expensive. But when I got a text, it was like, look, I gave myself a haircut and it looks so insane. And I was like, wait, you did what? Because men always do crazy things right before the baby's born. Like they either buy a pickup truck, a gigantic television, or they take the dog clippers to their own hair.
Yeah, I thought it was a pretty mild pre-baby freak out.
Did it look good?
It didn't look crazy.
It didn't look crazy.
It was just like, you know.
A little uneven in the back.
It was like, I just had the guard on. It was probably like.
A little spotty.
You know, 3/4 of an inch or something.
Kind of like what we would take the schnauzer to get, you know, take a little off the top.
Yeah. So no, I would often use those clippers. And I would be the one to groom her.
Dan was ready for a baby far before I was. And he would hold Emma like a baby at the table after dinner, just like rock her. So she was definitely a baby surrogate for a long time.
Oh, for sure.
Yeah.
And she was very docile, you know, and like sweet, and she would put up with me. I don't think she enjoyed being cradled like a baby.
Nope.
Because schnauzers are pretty aloof in their way. Like they don't actually want to be on your lap all the time, but I would force her to do it.
Yeah.
This is so cute.
I did very clearly remember right away how comfortable she was just laying down, putting her head in Jessica's lap. But as a writer, you know, I'm home a lot. So I'm like the perfect dog owner. Like you can't be a writer in California without a dog, maybe a writer anywhere. Like you need to have a dog because it gets you out of the house. They sit next to you while you write. They're homebodies like you are. So for me, it was just right away, she just kind of clicked with me. I would walk her, you know, 4 or 5 times a day. Anytime I got stuck when I was writing or felt fatigued or bored by what I was writing, I'd take her out for a walk. So, you know, I always
you're like a human schnauzer. Dan is the epitome of the schnauzer breed.
Well, no, I was embarrassed about that because I am, you know, like when you pass people on the street and you're like, oh, that woman looked just like a Cavalier King Charles Spaniel.
Yeah.
And you know, she's walking one. And that's how I was for sure. Especially as I got gray, as my beard got gray, I was like, oh God, I'm a doppelganger with my schnauzer.
Dan needs another schnauzer. Like we have a really wonderful puppy, but I gotta tell you, I don't think Dan's heart will be fully whole until we get another rescue schnauzer.
Oh, but I don't know how much of that was the breed and how much was
just her
Emma and how much was a rescue dog. That often rescue dogs have a certain temperament, maybe because of what they've been through, and maybe because on some level they're happy to be somewhere safe. So, you know, I just loved pampering the dog. You know,
you did.
You seem to think that Dan is also like a schnauzer in personality. In what way?
Yeah, she's very self-possessed, very kind, very gentle, very noble, you know, truthful. You feel like you would get like a truthful answer from her. I don't think she would know how to bullshit somebody. She was very stoic. So like schnauzers as a breed are very stoic. In that you wouldn't know they were, dogs are, but especially schnauzers, you won't know necessarily if they're sick because they'll hide it. She was there if you needed her, but like even when when our daughter came home from the hospital, she very much understood, like, I am not going to push my way into this. Like, I want to give space for the baby. Actually, I felt a lot of guilt when we first had our daughter because I felt like Emma pulled away a bit, but it was like in deference. It was almost like, too, she realized I had my hands full.
Yeah.
But she was always concerned. Like she would watch over. We read somewhere, and maybe this is total BS, but we read somewhere that schnauzers, you know, hundreds of years ago were bred to kind of babysit children.
Okay. Like in the Middle Ages.
To watch over like toddlers in the Middle Ages. Somewhere in Saxony or something.
They were like nannies. When the parents would go, the serfs would go like hit the fields, they would stay back and watch the kids.
And she had that. She never seemed like anxious, but she would kind of watch the situation. Yeah. She would put up with BB, you know, pulling her ears when she was a baby. And, you know, just very stoic. calm, without being timid.
Steadfast. Yeah, she was noble.
The word we used all the time was noble pooch, which I think is from Twelfth Night. I think that's a line from Twelfth Night. Really? No, it's a noble. There's some reference to a noble pooch, a noble beagle or something in Twelfth Night. And so for whatever reason, that's the word.
Before, when I was pregnant with BB, I was very sick for like 5 months. I, you know, was nauseous day and night. And she was so instrumental in calming me down, because at night was the worst. And at about 6 o'clock, I would lay down in the bed and she would like basically cover, like lay down next to me, basically laying her whole body on my belly. And that would actually make me feel not nauseous. It's like in Mexico, there's these hairless dogs that I read people put on their knees to like help their arthritis. That's what it was like. Like that spooning with this dog was the only thing that made me feel not nauseous. It was crazy. So already she was just this wonderful nursemaid in a way. And then, yeah. And then the baby came. And so, you know,
And should we lay out the timeline? So we, you know, we adopted her in 2008. BB was born, our daughter was born in 2013. So we had her about 5 years. And then in 2015, Jessica was diagnosed with stage 2 breast cancer. And then 6 months later, I was diagnosed with stage 4, but treatable colon cancer.
It's exactly what you think it would feel like, a total nightmare. And also you're like every day you just have to like get through that day, because we also had like a 1.5-year-old at the time. So it was like we had to just like get through the day, somehow not feel, you know, too sick and fake it for our daughter. So I would, luckily we had somebody who was helping us take care of BB, but I would basically go out walking for like 2 hours a day. It was kind of my thing to like, I would walk to a specific stairs and walk up and down the stairs and then back again. And it was my way of sort of gauging how strong I was at the time. And also walking was the only thing that would make me feel less stressed. But I would take Emma with me because I wasn't alone, you know, even though I was so lonely. And I apologize. Amazing. I don't cry at anything anymore because I'm probably a little dead inside. But when you bring up Emma, I'm like gone. But yeah, she was with me, you know, even though she, you know, didn't know what was going on. It was like I felt safe with her, you know. So yeah, she was. And then at night, she would, you know, cuddle up with us and be on the bed with me. I know there are some dogs who can be like really high maintenance, and that would have been really hard had we had that during that time. But she just like was there when you needed her, and when you needed space, she was happy to be.
You just had a sense with her, again, I don't know if it's the schnauzerness of her, but you just had a sense with her that she that she had a kind of like telepathic connection.
Now we really seem like we're from California.
No, but you felt like she had a soulful aura about her. But on the other hand, I would say for my part, you didn't have to worry about the complications of a human relationship when you're sick. You didn't have to worry about, oh, you know, like, for example, when you're going through something like cancer, many people are scared away by it. So many friends and acquaintances become scarce. Many friends and acquaintances show up in a way you've never imagined before. But some people understandably are scared away or whatever. And so there was something just so helpful and unique about having this dog who knew you didn't feel well, maybe on some level knew you really didn't feel well. But she just understood, and she was there, and she was going to take a walk with you, or she was going to, you know, keep you company.
And I felt like, you know, the other side has brought us this other little being who is, Emma was an old soul for sure. Like, who knows? Emma might have been, you know, I remember Oprah's talking about how, like, you know, if you have so many lives, at a certain point you get so like noble and like you figured out this, the secret of life, so you never come back. I feel like Emma might never is just up there.
She's ascended. She's
totally ascended.
She's reached nirvana or something.
Or I may not be able to get through this interview. Poor Dan. He's like, can we please have a minute where we're not crying about this dog?
This is like our wedding day.
I'm so sorry. I can't stop wedding. I the more I cry, the drier this guy gets.
Yeah, I'm dry as a stone.
It's a good yin and yang.
Oh God.
I'm crying on the inside.
I know.
What I do is I cry. If she cries now, I get very stoic. And then like 5 days later, I cry alone.
Like a schnauzer. You know, Emma wasn't taking the center stage crying. She was helping me cry.
Tell me what it was like then to be in the next phase where you found out Dan was sick too.
It wasn't the most fun we'd ever had.
I mean, you know, everyone always says unreal or surreal. I mean, I don't like surreal because it wasn't really dreamlike. It's just a heightened, crazy place to be. It's similar to any form of trauma, and trauma is relative. So we've all experienced some form of it. You know, you feel somewhat outside of time and place. And, you know, I think it's almost a loss of identity. You don't quite know, aside from just the fear of dying or losing your loved one, you just don't quite know who you are anymore. And that's what, you know, for me, since I was a kid, writing was a way to respond to trauma and to try to, you know, to find a story about myself and about Jessica that made sense and it would help me through. And, you know, like I said, Emma was just always kind of my silent writing partner. You know, she was just always there with me. You know, when I was ill, when I was feeling ill, you know, I didn't really cuddle with her. I don't know if this is like a guy thing
you
or something.
Like to be touched when you're feeling sick.
No, much more. Experience like was much more of like, I've got to dig a foxhole and weather the shelling. You know what I mean? I need to sort of get through this and keep myself together, keep myself alive. So
stoic.
So, you know, Emma for me was somebody who was in the room or was in the house, and she became somebody kind of like what Jessica was saying about the walks, who could lead me back out into the world, you know, lead me outside. You know, there's a poem in that collection that you read, Laura, about how, you know, during the worst of chemo, I had about, 9 months of chemotherapy. No, 6 months, but 9 months with surgery too. You know, I would tell myself if I could just walk to about 4 blocks from where we live and home, if I could make that walk, and then it was kind of magical thinking, then I would survive. You know, that was the idea. And 4 blocks from 20th Street to 24th Street on certain days was huge. And, you know, Emma was the one who went with me, you know, she would slow down for me. And, you know, so she was more of kind of like just my partner in terms of getting out of bed, if that makes sense.
She was the reason. She's a good reason too, to get out.
Yeah. And again, I'm the one, you know, with both these dogs, I walk the dog because I'm home so much. Like, you know, there's something of the everydayness of her was huge, was important to me. Do you know what I mean? Was helpful to me. The fact that I was doing something mundane again by taking her for a walk, I needed that, like, because everything else felt chaotic and crazy and terrifying, you know. So she was helpful in a kind of like, just how normal it was to be able to walk her, if I could do that.
One thing that I think people won't know because they haven't been Facebook friends with Dan for a long time too, is that even during the cancer period, the pictures of Emma were nonstop. It was like all you would see. And so like, you know, you see other people's dogs and you're like, that looks like the dog looked last week, but I still love seeing them.
Listen, people have had to unfollow Dan or mute him and he understands.
No, I accept that. I mean, it's twofold. For years, I just took pictures of Emma. And then once I had a daughter, I was taking and still am posting a million pictures of her. And I accept that that is too much for many people. But...
I love it.
Respected writer.
But the people who like it, then I feel like they get me. Because I don't have many hobbies. You know what I mean? It's like, I like running. And I like
taking pictures of
taking pictures of my dog, taking pictures of my daughter.
Sometimes I make it in. If I've brushed my hair, he's allowed to take my picture.
If he's had hair and makeup first, then
she makes it in when she's coaching your daughter's team.
Yeah, that's because half of my face is hidden. And if it's a bad shot of my butt, it's not allowed.
It's nixed.
Nixed. Cut.
When you finished, like, you both realized you were going to come out of this, you were going to be okay. Was your bond with her different than it had been before your cancers?
I mean, you really couldn't get closer to Emma than we were. So, like, I wouldn't say that it deepened because just we were always so close. The thing that was most challenging is then, like, as she got older, she started to get dementia, and that was really hard. And I know I don't want to be a bummer, but that was the hardest part.
Yeah, it felt like, once we started to feel, because, you finish cancer treatment, it's not like you dust your hands off and go, phew, and it's all over. You don't know. There's so much ambiguity and fear that you have to process for years afterwards.
Yeah.
So, it was kind of a crossfade between us coming out of treatment and Emma starting to, really age. And the dementia, and then she was eventually diagnosed with lymphoma, but that was a pretty slow process as well. So, I don't know. We kind of transitioned into helping her and trying to figure out the best way to take care of her.
Yeah.
As she got, old and sick.
And it was, it was a real gift to be able to take care of her because of how much she took care of us. It was also extremely triggering, though, for her to have, a form of cancer. Like, it was very hard when she was getting, and then we decided to get, because we are completely insane. We were like, well, of course, we're going to have to take our life savings and give her chemo. So we did that for her. And actually, we got an extra year with her, which was really beautiful. But I remember speaking to my astrologer, Heidi Rose Robbins, when I got the news that she was sick. And I said, I don't know what to do. And she said, I think Emma knows that you guys are okay. And she can go now. So Emma died, and we all, and all of my little dog friends around, people, humans and their dogs, they all knew it was happening, and we hugged and we cried early in the morning. And then another schnauzer actually passed away, and I held her owner, and we cried. And another dog around the corner passed away. And like, it's like we're all celebrating in the new puppies, but also checking in on the old ones too, And it was just, it's such a special way to feel community in a place, in a city where it can feel very isolating.
If Emma were here and she understood human English, what would you like to say to her?
I'm very simple. I would just want to say thank you.
That's what I was going to say.
Thank you for the gift of her affection and her presence in our lives for 15 years, especially during some very difficult times. And I hope we returned her love in kind,
Yeah, and then we can't wait to see her again.
Well, I can wait. I can wait a little while.
No, I know, but it will be nice to see her again. I know wherever she is, I hope wherever she is really wonderful. And I know she's also hopefully looking over us. I do think we all have that team of light and I think probably your pets are a part of that, at least just sending positive energy, One of the things I loved about her is that I did bring her to the writer's room all the time because I was so nervous having my own show that I was like, I have to have a therapy. I'm like one of those people that has to have a schnauzer follow her everywhere. And so I never had her on a leash. That's the other thing. It's like where she come from? I don't know. But she would just follow me into meetings And it would be like me and my schnauzer. The other thing that was wild she did was, so in the summers, the coyotes come down from the mountains, Santa Monica Mountains. And that's when you see a lot of, like, you know, cats have gone missing and all that. So I was walking Emma at like 10 p.m. and a coyote jumped out and tried to get her on her leash. And when I tell you, Emma went bananas on this coyote. Like, I mean, I was like, whoa, okay. Like, so we're talking about this docile schnauzer went crazy. And I'll never forget the look on that coyote's face. He was like, I gotta get out of here. And like, just like skittered down the street. Okay, so Dan's gonna read this beautiful poem.
Is this gonna be too much of a downer?
No, it's beautiful. When I posted this on Instagram, like, I got so many, like, thousands of DMs that just said, oh my God, why? I have to not go to work now. So enjoy this, okay?
This is from a book that's coming out in September called Survivor's Notebook. And it's all prose poems. So they're kind of more like little dramatic monologues or little stories than what many people would think of as like a poem, the conventional poem. And this is just called The Dog. We had a good run. We found her 14 years ago when she was one or three. We heard both. We knew nothing of her existence before us, though she'd cock an ear apprehendingly at Spanish. We babied her because we lacked a baby then. I walked her everywhere, cut her hair. She licked herself while I wrote. Last summer, I noticed her slowing down, trembling, blind and deaf, or nearly lost. The diagnosis was lymphoma, which disturbed us. Is it the house? Why are we still living here? We opted for chemotherapy, which we could not afford really, because how could we not? She had warmed my wife's body in our bed after the mastectomies, the infusions, the radiation. She left me alone after my diagnosis during the dismal months of my purgation because she sensed my shame, or she was afraid. And here we are. I drove her to the vet and read and dozed and fretted in the parked car, then led her home, stunned and timid, like my wife after chemo, like me. Then she'd sleep all afternoon. I'd listen for her subtle breaths. She suffered a seizure one morning across the threshold of our front door. The stairs were often daunting, but I pushed her, pulled her, hoping to build her up, tapping at her heels. She had her days. Nights she paced and stared through the window at the yard and the apparition of a coyote that peed upon the slates where she had peed in sunlight. Or she studied herself, the reflection she didn't recognize. Or did she? Sometimes she looked as if she were waiting to greet another dog she could see unhurriedly approaching. With the winter, she declined the orbital pacing around our island. Where was she? Who were we again? Our daughter cried, anticipating the mystery. My wife and I constantly cleaning up what the dog's body no longer retained, reminding me, unfortunately, of the leakage after my surgery, my body in spasm in bed spurting through sutured holes. Still, I walked her, gently pushed and pulled and lifted her in my arms. My wife fed her chicken while the technician administered the drug. I smoothed her ears. A blur leapt free of her last exhalation. And that's the poem.
Yep, that's really that's really beautiful.
That's it.
Thank you for sharing that. Oh God.
Jessica cries and I have to put it all into a prose poem. That's the way I do.
That make other people cry. If you don't like dogs, I don't know what's wrong with you. Like, and I don't quite frankly need to know you, because you might be a psychopath.
Yeah. A cat, sir.
But most people who like cats also like dogs. But like, if you're not an animal person, okay, right. Something's wrong with you. They are like a healing poultice, you know, to use a phrase from the olden days. They're like putting a healing pack on you. And like, I do believe that they heal you. That you heal faster with them. And that, like, you know, the Long Island Medium. Now we really are going to sound LA, but the Long Island Medium, Teresa Caputo, says that when you pass over to the other side, the first thing you see is your dog. They come, or your pet, they come running over this hill because they want to show you that you're safe here. I can't think of anything more beautiful. And also when I heard that, I was like, of course that's what happens. Of course they're waiting for you.